Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, November 6th, 2011. This is Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bow here.
Yo!
Hey, and I am back home. I am back in my home office. Yay.
Back in your home office, in which, by the way, I still hear that damn smoke detector beeping.
Yeah. So I figured out which smoke detector you hear all the time. It is the one in the master bedroom, which is about 15 feet from where I'm recording this right now.
Doesn't that drive your wife insane, for God's sakes? I mean, if I had one of those, like, we're sleeping, my wife would have killed me if I hadn't changed that battery already.
Well, I do want to point out that even though we moved in September, we didn't, like, have the bed actually set up and sleep on the bed until this week.
Oh, okay.
So, like, anyway, but,
yes, we're so so you've been, like, a couple of days with this fucking beep.
You know, beep. And you get used to it. Well, here's the problem.
I'll
tell you what the problem is here. The room has a high ceiling, and we can't reach it with the ladder that we currently have, so we have to go out and buy a fucking ladder to change the battery on this thing. Okay?
Okay.
So, it'll be a few more months.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Fucking would have... I mean, it's driving me crazy and I don't live there, for God's sakes.
So, I don't know. Maybe we'll figure out something. Maybe I'll get on top of the ladder we have and jump.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, great idea.
That's it. Yeah. So, I did want to have one final thought on the Europe trip. And this may be a little bit unfair. This is something I noticed particularly on the way home. But although I guess I noticed it going out there as well. It's just, and this is going to vary by country and by all kinds of stuff. But, you know, I did notice, you know, the stereotype of, let's say that Americans have a few more pounds on them. Including myself, it seemed very true. Like, I was wandering around in Romania, and, like, I remember just walking down the streets going, you know, everybody's, like, pretty fit. Young, old, whatever, they're, you know, in pretty good shape looking, you know? There's also, by the way, I should say, where I was, it was also very noticeable that the proportion of young people was higher than I'm used to. Like, the proportion of people in their 20s was much higher, and there's at least two factors there. I mean, there may be a demographic bulge in the country as a whole. I don't know. But I was also, like, kind of in a college town. So that also affected things, I'm sure. But, like, you know, I get on the airport, and it's, like, the first time, like, you know, the flight from Romania to Amsterdam, yeah, about the same, you know? But then as soon as I got to the gate where everybody was waiting for the Delta flight back to the States, all of a sudden... everyone's a lot bigger. I don't know. Just something I noticed. I don't know how that matches with your own international observations, Yvonne, but...
Well, the one thing is that I live in South Florida, which has a huge, like, international population. I can tell you that when I leave South Florida, yes, that's what we notice.
And like I said, I'm completely part of this. You know, I match the Americans nicely, but... Yeah. But, it was definitely noticeable. And there are little things, too, that, like, make up part of that, like, that I know, like, contribute to this. Like, you know, every time we went out to, like, restaurants or whatever, you know, for instance, if I order a soda, what do I do?
That's, like, it's $7 something stupid.
I don't know. The exchange rates were pretty favorable where I was, so I wasn't too concerned. It was a little expensive, but what you got was a little 12-ounce bottle.
Right.
And if you finish it, you have to order another one.
Right.
Whereas, what happens if you go to, like, any standard place in the U.S.? Like, let's do a sit-down restaurant. If you go to a sit-down restaurant, you get a big-ass cup completely full of your soda... And as soon as it gets even slightly down, they'll fill it up again.
Right.
And meanwhile, if you go to, like, a fast food place or whatever, the medium drink is now, like, 20 ounces.
Right.
You know? And the large is, like, the size of your head. You know? So, I'm sure there are other things, but I mean, it was actually harder to eat badly where I was. So, just because of little things like that.
Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing that I realized. So I went from working in Latin America where, was probably, especially since I gained weight the last few years, I was like on the heavy side of the guys on our staff.
Yeah.
And when I joined this company with all these people from the U.S., that I happened to be one of the one of the thinnest guys on the staff, that was like, oh, fuck, for God's sakes. I mean, really? Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So, anyway, enough about that. That was my last little remembrance of my Europe trip. Other than, getting back was, exhausting as usual, and I'm just now finally getting over all the getting over jet lag and stuff. Although, it wasn't that bad. I was basically in okay shape, like, the next day, but I was still lagging a little bit until yesterday on Saturday. I basically slept all day. So, I'm good now. So, moving on. You were going to get an iPhone 4S. They told you you would have it like Tuesday.
That's right.
You were going to tell us all about Siri. What happened?
I haven't got my phone yet. It hasn't shipped. It just hasn't shipped.
And I'll tell you, I was actually like surprised you said that they were going to have it in Tuesday, because I'd heard that the backlog was several weeks.
I asked them, okay, on the phone. It was one of the first – well, because the first thing is I went to a store to try to buy one.
Right.
Okay. And they told me that they were out. And now, I will admit that I went to a store that mistakenly I thought was a real AT&T store, but it was an authorized dealer.
You're not even going to an Apple store either. You're going to AT&T because of that screwed up thing on your account, right?
Right, exactly. So I had to go over there because of that, because I tried before to go to Apple and I couldn't get one. So so I went there and, I get there and – so I get to the store and they don't have them. Well, the thing that pissed me off is that the person, I tell them what the hell I want, and they're jerking me around for a while about questions about my bill and this and whatever. And then after like 20 minutes, they say, oh, well, we really don't have any. Then I'm like, well, what the fuck am I doing talking to you? I'm like, I basically just got up and left. Okay. Uh-huh. I mean, what the hell was I? So what? You think I came here for my health? I'm like, you could have told me that in the first place. So. Anyway, so then I called on the phone, and then I asked, is it in stock? First thing, just let me know. She went away from the line, went and checked, came back and said yes. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So based on that. But obviously, she was wrong, because I still don't have a phone to this day, and it's been over a week. And it hasn't shipped.
Well, what's the backlog on the website right now? It's like a couple weeks, right?
I don't know. It's a great question. I haven't looked. Let me, now that you mentioned that, let me take a look. But I have no idea. Because I hadn't bothered to check in Apple because of I can't really get one from Apple. So I didn't even bother to check. So let me go in and let me take a look.
Because I wouldn't imagine that you'd get much better in the stores. I mean, I know they sort of trickle out some inventory to the stores even when they're...
Well, sometimes, you do, because I still remember this one time when we were buying... I was in San Francisco in the Bay Area last year, and my brother wanted to buy an iPad, and we walked in, and all of a sudden these iPads arrived, and boom, and we grabbed one. That's it. We were done. We were out. And that's when they were, like, impossible to get. So,
ships 1 to 2 weeks for an AT&T iPhone in black.
Okay. So there you go. So that's what they say. So 1 to 2 weeks. So yeah. So it's out there. So which one did you pick? Well, I actually was buying a white one.
Same, doesn't change it.
64 weeks. Yep, ships 1 to 2 weeks. Yep. So basically they're out of stock.
Yeah. So there'd been some speculation. I know that there are some reasons behind this, behind just the stock.
I don't know if you've noticed, but I definitely did. On my 3GS, all of a sudden my battery life started going down. Now, I originally thought, to be honest, that because my 3GS is already pretty old, and I've recharged it like a billion times. And right. honestly, the battery life wasn't that great even before the iOS 5 upgrade. That all of a sudden the increased descent in the in my battery life had to do with the fact that, as happens with my batteries on my laptops, I mean, let's face it, as they get old, they go down. And I just thought that, it finally started happening. I mean, it had to be getting close. I mean, I put so many cycles on it that, I wouldn't be surprised. But then I've seen a whole bunch of comments, and then Apple actually fessed up this week that they have discovered a bug in the battery life on iOS 5. People are apparently saying it has to do with location services and how the new phone uses apparently them more intensely than before. And I will tell you that things started like making sense about that, because I also I noticed my iPad also the battery life, although not obviously because the iPad has pretty good battery life, although not as much of a problem with that the battery life did get shorter. Okay, on the iPad. But apparently my wife with her iPhone 4 hasn't experienced that problem.
Yeah, I'll tell you, on my 4, I haven't really noticed it. And in fact, it did really well on my trip. So I haven't noticed a problem. But I will say that I would probably be less likely to, because a number of months ago, I got one of these Mophie cases. Mm-hmm. That is basically an extended battery for the phone. I found with my normal usage patterns, I would need to plug in to charge mid-afternoon sometime on a normal...
On your iPhone 4?
On my 4.
Damn. Now, but I take it it's mostly... I mean, you're not talking on the phone that
much. No, I never... I talk on the phone maybe once a month.
Okay.
No, it's all...
What?
It's all internet usage.
Once a month?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
You never
Very
talk
rarely.
To, your wife or, kid?
No,
or...
not usually. When I was in Europe, I actually had to make that big phone call to fix the banking issue, and that's probably the longest phone call I've made in a year.
Dear God. Okay.
What's
the name of that case you got? It's a Mophie...
Mophie.
Mophie.
And they make a variety of different cases. Go to their website and you can see, and then...
I am not a case guy. I don't like cases. So I am anti-case.
Basically, it snaps onto your phone.
Let's see. I'm looking at it. There we go.
And it makes your phone a decent bit bulkier, but it more than doubles the battery life.
Well, then fuck that. If it makes it bulkier, forget it. Never do that.
So it's bulkier, but it's not bad. I mean, it's the iPhone by itself is really thin, so it's
well, I don't want
bad.
The phone to be bulkier. I want a fucking small phone. I mean, to me, I still think that these are all too big. If I could go back to having the size of a freaking StarTAC, for God's sakes, I'd be thrilled to pieces. It's too big. They're all too fucking big. I like small phone. If they could fold the screen, why not?
Yeah.
Actually, I've heard that, I've already seen a couple of concepts working on that, actually, so.
Yeah, so anyway.
It doesn't look, okay, I will say that I'm looking at the pictures, it doesn't look like it really adds that much bulk. But anyway, bottom line is that, yeah, there is some issue, apparently, with the battery life, and so, apparently, there's going to be a fix relatively soon, and I think that, and some people were mentioning that the reason why they were holding up a little bit on shipping more phones out is just, in order to have the fix out, and people, when they get the new phones and they activate them, so they'll get the fix and boom, and they're on their way, so we don't have that problem. So that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at it. It doesn't look like it really makes it that much bigger.
It's not that much big. I mean, it's significantly thicker. But, significantly thicker, you're starting from a thin phone, so it's still not that bad. I mean, it still fits nicely in my pocket.
I see. I'm looking at it now. Because, it really, wraps itself entirely around the phone, right?
Yes, exactly.
It's like a...
And
it replaces the plug that you normally plug into. You plug into a USB type.
Yes.
Interesting.
And I will say, I like this a lot. I've used it maybe a month now, and I really like being able to, you know, when the phone gets low at the end of the day, flip a switch on the case and kaboom, I'm charging, even though I'm not plugged into anything, and it lasts me the rest of the day, no problem. The one downside I'd say to it is the little jack where you plug in the USB port has a tendency to get loose, you know, over time, and that can be annoying. It doesn't like plug really snugly, so like you have to sort of when you do plug it in, make sure it's not going to fall out. But
okay, well, it does make the phone significantly longer. I mean, because of the thing where the USB thing. I mean, that's
a little bit longer, a half an inch.
Well, that's a lot.
Quarter of an inch. I'm looking at it here. Anyway.
That does make the phone quite more bulkier. I'm looking at this here. I'm looking at a side-by-side. That's way too fucking much. No way. Fuck, see, it's one of the reasons why I don't like most of these damn Android phones. They're enormous. I don't know. The other day, somebody loaned me a fucking, like, Android phone. One of these really... You know, one of the things about the Android phones, they're talking about shipments of the Android phones. I mean, they make a lot of really cheap, crappy Android phones. Okay? All right? That's like the bulk of the volume. And what I'm looking at is that... Android is taking a lot of that shit, crappy volume that BlackBerry used to sell... With their phones that were simple. So Android's picking up a lot of the slack on those, okay? And I grabbed one the other day, and I grabbed it, and I was playing with it, and I was like, fuck, what a piece of shit. I mean, I'm one of the cheap ones, on the other hand, I have one of my guys that works for me that has one of these top-of-the-line Galaxy, you know, S things, whatever, that came out. And that's significantly nicer, okay? All right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, there are some models that are just utter shit.
Well, I'll tell you just on the case, it's all a matter of trade-off. Like, my usage pattern, I kill the battery really quickly, and it's a pain in the ass to plug in and charge before I'm done for the day. And so this is like a godsend. It relieves that problem entirely. It makes it a little bit bigger, but it still fits in my pocket, no problem. And so it works for me.
Okay. Sounds good.
And let's take a break. I think we killed those issues. We'll be back to talk about the Republican circus. There you go. Sing us out, Yvonne.
This is a break, oh yes, this is a break. This is a break, cause no one gave me any suggestions. I told you, I warned you. So this is a break, this is a wonderful break, a wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes, yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, 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 this is a break. Yes, this is a break, 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 break. Yes, it is a break. And now, and now, and now, and now the break is over.
Okay, and we're back. So the Republicans. I mean, this really is a circus. This is like, you look at it and you can't believe what's happening is happening. And it's like, really? This is what's going on here? I mean, and I continue to think that in the end, Romney will pull it out, and this will be Romney. But at the same time, like, you know, Kane's still ahead in the polls. It's been like 2 weeks. He's had a little sex scandal. He's still ahead in the polls.
I thought this music went appropriately with the circus. There you go. Okay, so yes, it's kind of like that. That's how the Republican thing feels. And
you got Kane and Gingrich having their little one-on-one debate. Like,
yeah, what the fuck was that all about? I'm sorry. I'm like, Kane and Gingrich decided to have a one-on-one debate? Oh, like, I saw that, and I'm like, I thought I was reading this thing wrong, and I'm like, what the fuck, are you kidding me? What the hell what is this for?
Because they're clearly the front runners.
Obviously, of
Well,
course.
I mean, Kane might be. What the hell?
Who knows?
Yeah, look, all I can say is, if Kane somehow actually manages to get the nomination... This will be the most entertaining election season in a long time. But look, no.
I think that a number of people will have a complete coronary at the convention, okay, if Kane wins the nomination.
Well, here's the thing. There's, like, he's apparently not just ahead in the national polls right now, but he's ahead in Iowa, South Carolina, and a couple other early primary states. Romney's got New Hampshire down because he's from Massachusetts. But
right.
But there's a possibility Kane will pick up a bunch of delegates in the first few states.
Right.
And I don't know. Look, and you've got, and I guess the Tea Party is now sort of rallying behind Kane.
Kane, right. That's the one thing I was reading, that the Tea Party is like, you know, hates Romney, okay, loves Kane.
Well, and look, this is very similar to 4 years ago, where we were talking about how the Republican Party has traditionally been a coalition of very different types of conservatives. You have the religious conservatives, you have the economic conservatives, you have the libertarian conservatives, you have the evangelical Christians, you have the social conservatives. There's some overlap between these groups, especially the way I just rattled them off. But fundamentally, you've got different types of people who actually don't agree on a lot. You know, and you had candidates like Reagan who were able to sort of bring this coalition together.
Right. And
George W. too. Because he was able to get the evangelicals and the economic guys and blah, 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 and bring them all together and get them all excited and push them forward. This time, and last time, you had the situation where all of these guys supported different people, they were all flawed candidates, and in the end, they all came to McCain. you know, because he was sort of the least objectionable, next in line, blah, blah, blah. You know, nobody liked him, but everybody could sort of hold their nose and say, okay, we'll go with him. And that seems like the position Romney's in now, except some of the core groups are much more reluctant to just bite.
The main difference you got is the whole Tea Party element to this.
Like, you've got the evangelical Christians who are very uncertain about the idea of a Mormon.
Right.
You've got the Tea Party guys who are all not trusting Romney on the economy or anything else. I mean, basically anybody who's a social conservative, any of the diehard conservatives don't trust Romney because they don't believe he really is one because, well, he probably isn't.
He was from Massachusetts.
You know, because his record in Massachusetts is very centrist.
Right.
And now he's saying all kinds of conservative things, but it doesn't match his record. You know?
Well, but you know what? So was fucking McCain.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And they still wound up nominating him.
Yeah. And
now we don't, like I said, the two elements you mentioned were not there before.
Yeah.
You've got a guy who's a Mormon. I mean, when you've got a very strong evangelical Christian community that doesn't really, I mean, it's just not their belief. Okay, so it's very difficult to support that. Okay, let's start off with that. I mean, forget about it. I don't think it's a racist thing or whatever. I just think it's like, for example, it's like trying to vote for a liberal when you're a conservative. I mean, it's just, you know, they don't jive. Okay, so that's one problem you've got. That makes it difficult. Then you add the other element of, you know, the Tea Party, which we definitely didn't have this strong element in the last election cycle.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, like, the pipe dream that all of us political folks have is that somehow this won't get decided early and we'll go into the convention with everything undecided and in chaos. You know, and the convention,
I think that, you know, somebody will still win, but the problem is that it looks like whoever the hell wins is going to be significantly hampered.
Well, and
in one way or another,
we still have some Republicans talking about it's not too late for somebody else to get in.
Right.
Yeah, because it's...
And we're already almost... This is not like May. We're almost at December already.
Right. Well, yeah. But we've already passed the filing deadline for New Hampshire, for instance.
Right.
So, like, anybody getting in now basically gives up the first few states and gets in after that. And that's a very hard thing to do. But, you know, if there's weakness and blood in the water... You know, and no consensus coming out of this because, you know, Kane's winning Iowa and Romney's winning New Hampshire and God knows what happens in South Carolina. Maybe Kane wins that too. Or you know, Kane might collapse by then. Yeah, I don't know. But, like, right now, you know, he's still not. And this is shattering everybody's expectations because it's like, first of all, Kane was one of the candidates that everybody's like, this is a joke candidate. Will never get above 1 or 2%. And frankly, I believe Kane thinks that. You know, it was like he never expected to actually go anywhere. He's selling his damn book. but, you know, all of a sudden he's at the top of the polls, and then everybody's thinking, oh, this'll last a week. And it's lasted a couple weeks now, and it's even like the first polls after this latest scandal hit has no effect. You know, maybe we'll see an effect next week. Maybe it'll completely collapse. I don't know. But the point is, it's just like, you know. So here are a couple things that would be, you know, again, sort of political guy pipe dream type stuff. One is the brokered convention. Two is convention picks somebody like Romney, but then the Tea Party decides they don't like it and they're going to run somebody as a third party. Another is... a moderate Republican doesn't like a conservative, you know, they nominate Kane or somebody, and somebody like Huntsman decides to run as a third party.
Right.
You know, and these are all, like, really, really fun options. Now, what's probably going to happen, Romney will lock it up, Romney will get the nomination, and it'll be a pretty tight race between Romney and Obama, and we'll still have a lot of fun talking about that, because, you know, given where the fundamentals are right now, you know, that's not going to, you know, it's not like Obama has a slam dunk here. He's in for a race. If they nominate somebody like Romney, if they nominate like somebody like Kane, I know the economy is bad, but can it really be bad enough that somebody like Kane has a shot?
I don't know. Who knows? I think they're all nuts.
Hey, Sarah Palin might jump back in.
Well, fuck. What the hell? Well, you know, anything's possible at this point. That's all I'm saying. But what the fuck?
Yep. Okay. Let's take another break here. We'll be back. A bunch of sort of related economic issues. Yvonne wants to talk about MF Global. And then this ties in, of course, just through the general economy to continued nonsense with the Occupy protests and some really goofy stuff going on with what's going on with the Greece bailout as well. So we'll be back after this message. Okay, we are back. Yvonne, let's start with MF Global. I've heard the name. I know it was associated with John Corzine, who is a former governor of New Jersey, I believe. But I really haven't followed this. So what's going on with this?
Well, MF Global right now filed for bankruptcy. And by the way, it's one of the top 10 bankruptcies in the history of the United States.
What the hell are they? I've never heard of them before.
They were a small, relatively medium-sized broker trader company. I mean, they were like Merrill Lynch, but smaller. Think about it that way. Okay. All right. So they handled funds, they traded commodities, they did a whole bunch of stuff. Well, anyway, they also traded on their own account, and apparently they decided to somehow take a whole bunch of extremely risky bets on European debt, okay? Using their own trading capital, plus they actually borrowed depositors' funds and use them to place the bets. Well, with the whole crisis spinning out of control in Europe and all the crazy shit that happened, they had leveraged those bets like 30-40 to 1. They lost like 10%, and then like in a matter of like no time, they were like the margin calls started coming in, and they had lost all their money, and it was game over. They went belly up really, really fast. And, and it was all really related to them placing, I guess that they had placed like a significant bet thinking that the European area debt situation was resolved and had purchased a lot of European debt. And all of a sudden, all the fucking, everything moved against them real fast and done. They went bankrupt. Now
why does this matter to anybody other than them?
Well, I think one of the things that was just shocking is that, you know, we're talking about all this stuff, how we're trying to regulate banks and making sure that they don't have this much leverage and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, John Corzine apparently had managed to talk every regulator out of actually, you know, they had looked at the books a couple of times, had told them they were holding too much risk. They had basically convinced everybody, nah, we're fine, no problem, you know, we're okay. And then, boom, this happens like in like no time. And then everybody's just scared about the fact that we keep talking about how we're, you know, well, first you've got this entire band of people that says that we don't need to regulate Wall Street, that blah, 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 all this shit. And then you've got all on the other side where, what the fuck? Not just, you know, we supposedly put all these regulations to look at these guys like more closely. Not only did it fail, but I mean, they even borrowed like fucking like funds that were held by depositors in order to fucking bet on this shit. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people got nervous. I mean, because it basically shows that we may be in no better shape whatsoever from what happened, like, in 2008.
Well, I think that's actually, and that is, you know, tying into the Occupy stuff. That's one of the things that, you know, has been one of the Occupy complaints is basically, nothing happened after that right. big meltdown.
That's right.
There has been, first nothing. Of all, nobody went to jail.
Right.
Nobody's even been prosecuted. You know, the same people, for the most part, are in charge of most of these companies. And there have been no regulatory changes of any real significance. I think there were a couple sort of, you know, things that were done to say that we had done something, but nothing that really actually put any significant constraint on any of these actors to keep them from doing the exact same thing again.
Right. And that's the thing. And obviously, I mean, they were able to do it and fucking like lose billions and leave a lot of people holding the bag. And I think that,
well, at least in this case, I guess they weren't too big to fail. They just went down.
Yeah, they just went down because thankfully they weren't like. But think about it; they were still a $60 billion bankruptcy. I think the one thing that scared people more than anything else was the fact that they were doing all this trading, also including borrowing using depositors' funds to do this, and that there may be a whole bunch of people that, you know, there were a lot of people this week that were trying to access their money and just could not. Gone. Yep. So that's. That's
well, and I will say that's the kind of thing, and you know, there's, you know, if you have your money at like brokerage kind of places instead of, you know, banks or credit unions or whatever, there is an entirely different set of
protection system,
set of protections, and they're weaker.
Yeah, and but the one thing is that normally, I mean, let's face it, if you have your money at a company like a company that doesn't do trading on its own account, say like Schwab, Fidelity, E-Trade, most of those, you own the securities; they're in your name. So even if the firm goes down, you usually don't have that problem. And when they have cash, they have the cash with another bank. Okay, like Schwab keeps it with PNC. MF Global actually kept it with JP Morgan. Okay, all right. What happened in this case is that there is a quirk that I didn't realize, okay, that actually existed, which allowed MF Global to be able to borrow that money to use it for trading on its own account, which, to be honest with you, to me is nutty. I mean, the only money they should be using for trading on their own account is their own capital, not fucking borrowing depositors' funds, okay? And the fact that they were able to do that and use that money and then lose it, okay? Fuck. I mean, that's scary shit, okay? That is really scary shit.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things you want to feel confidence that where you as a private investor put your money, you can get it back.
Exactly.
And anything that starts shaking that confidence, you know, it has the potential of undermining the whole system.
Absolutely. Yes. And that's what that's scary about.
Because people are
going
to be like, okay, if this could happen to this company, might it happen to Schwab? Might it happen to, you know, Merrill? Might it happen to, you know, whoever else I happen to have my money at? And, you know, maybe it can, maybe it can't because of what they're doing and all kinds of things. But as an individual investor, I don't know. I just become nervous. And if I become nervous enough, I take out my cash.
That's right.
You know, and if enough people do that, everything falls completely apart.
Yep, pretty much.
Speaking of which. Yesterday was like, what was it, Move Your Account Day or whatever?
Move Your Account Day?
There was a movement that spawned off the Occupy, but had grown wider. That was trying to encourage people to close their accounts at big banks and move their money to local credit unions or locally owned banks.
That's not a bad idea, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, most of these fucking banks are just such fucking weasels. I do a lot of business myself with a credit union, okay? You know, I will admit, I do that.
My family's main accounts, like, you know, savings and checking and stuff, are with a local credit union.
Yeah, and the service you get is better. I mean, everything. To be honest with you, what I do, I mean, I've had mortgages. I've done a lot of business with a credit union, and I got to say that, you know, compared to like dealing with, I do have an account at JP Morgan Chase. Okay, but I actually keep very little money in that JP Morgan Chase account. I use it more. The only reason I think I keep it for the most part is because they have branches, and sometimes I need to do transactions like, I don't know. So I went to Europe the last time. I need to go get cash.
Right.
And, you know, pulling cash from the ATM is a pain in the neck because you can only get a certain amount, and I needed more cash than normal. And, you know, being able to go to the bank and get the cash is convenient. Okay. And the credit union that I use is in California, and so they don't have a local branch. So, if my credit union had a local branch over here, I wouldn't have the account, to be honest with you. Mm. But, I mean, I would have everything at the credit union. I mean, I remember when I was at Purdue, Purdue also had a Purdue employees credit union, which was great. And I would encourage people, I gotta be honest with you. I've done business with credit unions for 15 years, 20 years. If you have a good local credit union through your employer or local, there are great places to do business. They usually have lower interest rates on everything. The process for review and the approvals is usually a friendlier process. They have credit cards with relatively low interest rates. Like, you go to any bank fees, shit like that, everything is cheaper. I would encourage everybody to use them. I mean, because they are a good source of getting things at a relatively at very good very good deals, you know? I mean, because banks, right? Well, you know, even though, like, I don't know if you saw that finally after the whole backlash on the fees, that all the banks, like, basically gave up. Gave up. Yeah.
Well, because, and this was the movement I was talking about was actually in part prompted by that. But, you know, because what they saw was, hey, guess what? People are price sensitive. And as long as everybody doesn't do this at exactly the same time, people are going to move their money to places with less fees.
That's right.
Surprise.
Let me put it this way. My credit union, I have a credit card that doesn't exist anymore. Many years ago, I had a credit card that has a prime rate on it. Those credit cards don't exist anymore, okay? If you go to almost any bank right now, Citibank, JP Morgan Chase, all of them, the cheapest credit card that you can get right now is in the 12-13% range.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. It was common like 5-6 years ago when rates were even higher. You get a credit card with a 7%, 8% interest rate.
Yep.
Okay. 6-8. Now they're all in the teens. Okay. However, my credit union, for example, has a credit card with a low rate of 7.25% interest. I mean, you know, so. I mean, which is significantly, you know, better than any large bank, for example. So a new auto loan, you can get it all the way down to only 2.99% for a used car, no matter how old the car, really, to be honest with you. You get the process approved. I got for a car loan in 24 hours. Boom, boom. I mean, no problem. So they have a lot of things. I think that they're, they even have, for example, something that you can't even get in a bank anymore, a personal loan.
Right.
A signature personal loan. Those don't exist at the bank anymore. You can't get that shit. So those are the things that I see where, you know, the services and some of the stuff that you get at a bank that you just can't get, anywhere anymore.
So. Let's take a quick break. We've got a couple more economic things, I think, still to talk about. But we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Cool.
Okay, so I did want to, pivoting off the move your bank movement thing, which, by the way, I know I'll see TV coverage with a bunch of people who did this, but I think it'll be a drop in the bucket. Like, it's not actually going to be a noticeable thing. It's not like Citibank's going to suddenly be hurting.
No, because you know one of the things, but let me tell you why. A lot of people, what they discovered is that, I mean, the reason why they went, why they backed down wasn't so much because people were moving accounts, because not a lot of people started moving accounts because it's a pain in the neck. One right. of the reasons the banks realized that they may be able to have gotten away with this shit if the public end created such a backlash was that accounts are sticky. People don't like moving them. You have all these automatic payments. You're paying right. for your mortgage, and you're paying for this, and everybody is like, you know, people don't write paper checks as much anymore. So all of a sudden it becomes a real pain in the neck in order to move. It's not like before where, you know, you got your paycheck and you went to the bank to deposit it. No, now it's like straight into your bank account, so you got to change your direct deposit and you got to change this and you got to change that. So they figured that, you know, they thought they could catch people flat-footed and just, you know, do it and nobody would do anything because it was a pain in the neck. But, you know, the protests came out and, you know, people started like really the newspapers and the press and everybody made a fucking stink about it. And voila, it died, amazingly enough.
So moving on from that, though, like I wanted to talk briefly about the Occupy movements again, because there have been some developments there. First of all, municipalities keep cracking down on these guys and doing various things. More people have been injured. But there's another significant change on the other side, which is the Occupy folks, I guess in Oakland, actually started to actively have as a goal disrupting various sorts of commerce.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they went and tried to shut down the port. And they did marches on banks where they were trying to, basically make it hard to get in and out of the bank and things like that. And, you know, I've said every week that we've talked about this that, hey, you know, First Amendment rights, let these people protest, leave them alone. The municipalities are crazy to be taking action against them. However, that's as long as they're, you know, peacefully protesting in an area and not being disruptive. Once they start actually, you know, getting in the way of people going about their business, I think that changes.
I agree.
Now, I'm still not sure the right thing to do is to tear gas them.
Well, I don't think the right thing to do is to tear gas them.
You know, or run over them with tanks or anything. But, you know...
Tanks? That sounds cool. Tank?
Yeah, well... But I think that's crossing a line. I think, you know, and I've seen in other areas they were talking about the protesters starting to, like, throw bottles at police and stuff like that. Yeah, no. Your moral high ground is when you're nonviolent and not disruptive and just making your point. As soon as you start being disruptive, as soon as you start getting in people's way, let alone once you start being violent... All that moral high ground is gone.
Yeah, I agree.
So I wanted to mention that. I don't know if you have any additional thoughts on that, Yvonne.
No, I mean I agree with you. I mean, you know, I think we mentioned this earlier, where it's just that I told you guys my story about how I lost my business basically because a whole bunch of people that thought, you know, that protest, you know, they took their protest way over the line and basically wound up, you know, chasing me and a lot of people out of business. And, you know, I just don't think that they, you know, and to be honest, I was supportive of what these guys were protesting. But you know, these guys wound up pissing off everybody, including myself, into not wanting to support them because they basically did it in a way that, you know, undermined their goals, in my opinion. So,
okay. So, let me. Oh, by the way, Alex just came and sat on me. So
yeah, I heard.
Yeah, he was telling me about his candy. He's got Halloween candy.
That's good.
So before we move on, and we had one more topic, but what the hell is happening in Greece, Yvonne?
I don't know that the president all of a sudden got cold feet on a lot of the austerity measures and deals, and all of a sudden wanted to have a referendum on it, and then everybody fucking like. You know, the guy lost all spine and everybody just fucking, like, flipped. And
although I heard for a little bit that it was sort of like he threatened a referendum. Then it became absolutely clear. Oh, I'm having a lollipop stuck in my mouth. He threatened a referendum. Then it became absolutely clear that if the referendum wasn't passed... they'd basically be kicked out of the euro.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And so then the opposition in Greece suddenly agreed, whereas before they weren't agreeing. Yes, lollipop. And so then he backed off, and some people were actually saying this was a smart political sort of bluff by Papandreou, or however you say his name.
Well, that may be true, but yet at the same time, it caused such a panic at the same time that, he apparently is almost on the verge of resigning.
Well, the plan right now is they are trying to form a new coalition government, and he will resign as soon as it is formed.
That's right. So, yeah, I mean, it caused a panic at the same time. It was just, you know, I don't know if the timing wasn't good or whatever, but bottom line is just the whole thing just caused a complete fucking panic.
Well, I mean, there's also the question of, you know, are these austerity measures actually something that, you know, the Greek public will be able to live with once they come in place anyway?
Who the fuck knows?
You know?
I mean, I don't know. You know? I mean, but... Look... You know... It's a very simple thing. I mean, you got your checkbook, you got your income, you got your expenses, you know, no credit card company wants to give you any more money. You got to fucking live with it. I mean, you guys, you know, they created this situation yourself. I mean, nothing else to do. I mean, let's face it. I mean, they've been living way over like what they could, you know, what they could, you know, live with for a long time. And they just, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the hell they expect. I mean,
would it actually be better for Greece at this point to leave the euro and go ahead and inflate a new currency?
I've said this already multiple times. I've said that I believe yes, but I don't think that's going to happen at this point. But I, if it were me, I'd probably what I would have done would have been a mess. Yes, but in the long term, was it the better thing? Yes.
Yeah, well, there you go, I guess. So we were briefly going to talk about Google Plus. I don't have much to say, although
it's plussy.
Is what?
It's plussy.
It's plussy. No, the one thing that Google is doubling down on Google Plus. Yeah, they had a big splash when they first launched, and then. Yeah, I know, Alex.
Exactly. Then they did that. And that
exactly. You know. From everything I've seen, usage is down. Yes, I know.
I haven't fucking used it. I mean, I signed up for it because I can't remember who the fuck invited me.
I did.
You. Okay. Fuck, I don't even know how to use it.
I mean, I've logged on a few times. Traffic is low. I'm not seeing that much there. I have, a whole bunch of friends. Like, I added a bunch of people to my circles, and they added me. In like the first couple weeks, and then there's been very little activity since then. It's slowing down. However, Google, like I said, is doubling down. They're adding Google Plus integration into everything. They have that damn toolbar on the main search page now. They just added a bunch of stuff to YouTube. The big outrage this week was
candy.
Yes, I know the candy.
That's the big outrage. Holy shit, my God.
Yeah, and Google Reader was the big thing this week, which, you know, I've used religiously, and people were upset that, yes, Alex? Hand. Okay, I'll hold your lollipop. Okay. You know, people are upset that they were removing the sharing features.
He not happy.
No. Well, anyway, the bottom line is I think Google is actually being annoying by putting this plus stuff everywhere on their site. I know why they're doing it, but it makes me want to look for alternatives to their service.
But what are the things that you're using from their... Okay, all right. I mean, I'm a guy who the only thing that they do at Google... is search.
Yeah.
I don't use Gmail. I don't use any of this shit. Okay? So, what is it that you're... I don't know.
The things that are annoying me... Mommy's coming to get you, Alex.
You were sitting quietly. It seemed okay.
Anyway, The Google Reader changes do annoy me. Not so much the removing of the sharing stuff, which I used only a little tiny bit, but the UI changes are kind of annoying. But I'm, you know, I use other apps that still synchronize with Google Reader. The search itself, I'm finding even the search results themselves are getting more annoying because they're pushing the integration further into that. Like if you do a Google search now, these like plus one buttons are all over the place, you know? I don't know. It just, I think they're finally trying to like figure out how to really move into the next generation and monetize in some way other than the Google ads, but they're becoming annoying in doing so. Not so annoying yet that I'm like defaulting to search on Bing or something, but I don't know. I'm not thrilled with the direction. Like, you say, okay, you only use search, but now if you go and do a search, you have the bar at the top that has, you know, the mail and the Google Plus stuff and all this other stuff there constantly reminding you of its presence whether you use it or not.
I see what you're saying, but I guess I haven't fucking, like, paid attention to any of it whatsoever. So I've been, like, oblivious to the whole thing.
Well, I was fairly oblivious until the Google Reader changes. The new UI is annoying in a variety of ways. Basically, they have too much of the screen real estate taken up by navigation and stuff, and they squeeze your content into a smaller space. And that's kind of annoying, and I did use the sharing feature they got rid of a little bit, but not enough. It's not at the level of, oh my god, I have to switch right now. But it's at the level of, really? Are you going to screw with this? It was good how it was. You know, the new thing isn't adding any value. It's just making it more annoying. And I know they're trying to... You know, there's value I could potentially get out of it if I engaged further. But I don't want to. Google knows enough about me already. I don't want to add more to that, you know?
Yeah. I see what you're saying. But, okay, well...
Anyway, that's it. Anything else to say about anything?
No, just one thing that... I will tell you that... One of the things in Steve Jobs' bio that I finished. Yes, I completely finished. And he did grab Larry Page and talked to him in the last couple of months and told him after he got back to being CEO and he said, dude, you know something? You guys have got to fucking focus, man.
Yeah.
You have got you're doing way too much shit on which a whole bunch of it which is crap, okay? And most of it in which you're not making money, okay? Right. You guys have got to fucking figure out what the hell you want to focus and do it.
Well, okay? And frankly, I think some of what's going on that I was just bitching about is possibly a result of that new focus. Mm. You know, but I'm not sure they're focusing on the right things, or maybe they are focusing on the right things. Maybe they're focusing on
things on the right things, but they're not. They're things that are taken away from what you were.
Right.
You know,
I mean, they might be. They might be focusing on things that they'll be able to monetize and make good money off of, but will make it less of a good service as a user. I don't know.
Understood.
Or maybe for different users and not me. I don't know.
Right. I mean, it's sometimes. I mean, let's face it. Sometimes when services or companies go and like do certain changes, like Apple, for example, has taken a lot of people who are hackers, for example, and they basically said, "We don't want you."
Yeah.
I mean, we don't want you. Okay. We don't want you because you are such a tiny percentage of the computer using population that by catering to you, we're making most people's computing experience miserable. Right. You want that? Buy a fucking Android phone. Congratulations, knock yourself the fuck out. Okay?
Exactly. And that may well be the right choice for them as a company. But,
right.
You know,
So, you know, sometimes you make choices like that as a company, and, you know, and you wind up alienating certain users. I mean, but, you know, but you, as long as you make the choice and you thought what you were targeting, I think the one thing about it, Sam, is, like, honestly, in the internet right now, we're talking about Apple, Google, and a whole bunch of things in the internet. I mean, I feel like you've got a lot of choice on what you want to do right now, depending on what platform you want. I mean,
yeah,
you,
and
you
choice is good.
You want a fucking Windows computer, you want to do that experience, fine. You want to, like, tweak Android and, like, fucking tweak the hell out of it, and you want to build your own tablet. You know, they got those stupid, silly laptops and shit and whatever the fuck they got going around. Go ahead. Go do that. You want an Apple, you can get yourself an Apple. You can do, like, whatever the hell you want right now, which is, to me, it's great. I think I love it. You know, people have their choice.
Yeah, no, choice is good. Competition is good. There's a lot of innovation happening right now, and that's all good.
Yep.
Hey, so bottom line before we sign off, the Steve Jobs bio, good read, good book?
It was a good read. It was a good read. I think that, you know, what you get is, you know, like, he knew that it wasn't going to be a flattering picture of himself. But yet at the same time, look, it gives you the reality of who he was. And look, take it for what it's worth. He was obtuse, he was a pain in the neck, he was everything that you want, but yet at the same time, you get to see that, you know, despite all the flaws that he had, like, why the people that worked with him loved him. Okay?
Yep. He was an asshole, but he was brilliant, and he got things done.
Exactly.
And he changed the world.
Yeah, pretty much. So.
Okay. Thanks for joining us for yet another episode of Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, anything else. And other than that, tell your friends to listen to, and goodbye, and talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.